We are at the halfway point in a very successful session of the Indiana General Assembly for the people of Indiana. I'm very grateful for the efforts of members of the General Assembly, particularly with regard to items that are on the administration's agenda. I'm pleased to report that 12 out of 12 of our administration's agenda bills are not only alive, but important work has been done. And we look forward to continuing the process as those bills cross over and continue to make their way through the legislative process. But I'm very encouraged at the level of collaboration that's taking place, in many cases in a broad and bipartisan fashion, on priorities of this administration. Chief among them is in the area of education. I said early on this should be an education session of the Indiana General Assembly, and I'm very pleased with the progress that we're making on a broad range of education initiatives. I hope you got the news late last night. The Indiana Department of Education announced once again graduation rates are up. Our non-waiver graduation rate moved from I think 81.7% to 83.4%. This is a credit to our teachers, to our schools, to our parents, and most especially to our kids. And so every Hoosier should be proud. We're making great progress in our schools, but we still have a ways to go. And that's why we articulated the agenda that we put forward: increased funding for our public schools, increased options for greater flexibility in our public schools, raising the foundation under our public charter schools, and lifting the cap on our school choice program. That, in addition to some common sense reforms in the State Board of Education, I think are all moving well through the General Assembly, and will continue to build on the obvious momentum that we have in our schools today. A couple things to highlight, and then I'm going to go to your questions. First, very grateful for the broad and bipartisan support for a couple of measures. In particular, our administration's been advancing the Freedom to Teach legislation. It actually passed out of the House of Representatives by 95-2. This is legislation that is designed to give traditional public schools the ability to opt out of current public schools' restrictions and regulations and even agreements, so that they can put more dollars in paying teachers more. And that's the whole idea behind Freedom to Teach. The principle is that we want to give schools greater flexibility to be able to get more dollars in the classroom to increase compensation for our teachers. I'm very pleased about the broad bipartisan support on that issue. Also, although it's gotten less attention, our Medical Shield bill moved 91-0 out of the House of Representatives. This essentially will open the doorway to health professionals who are volunteering their time for the disadvantaged in our state, and it essentially clears the way for them to be able to participate that without unnecessary economic barriers in place. I commend it to your attention. Also, obviously, very grateful to see the balanced budget amendment move out of the Senate by a 47-3 vote. This is really very early in that process as well. Obviously, we're anxious to see this General Assembly move forward with a balanced budget amendment. It'll have to be considered by another General Assembly 2 years down the road. But we think that we're at a good starting point on this balanced budget amendment draft, and very grateful for the efforts in the State Senate to move that forward. Lastly, I'm very pleased that both the House and the Senate have passed bills that simplify the Indiana tax code. The tax simplification was a priority of our administration in this session, and we're pleased that these bills eliminate some 20 tax credits deductions. They close loopholes, create bright line tests, and reduce areas of potential litigation. So we think it's one more step in our ongoing effort to make Indiana more competitive, more attractive for investment. And I'm genuinely grateful to the leadership in both chambers that have made that possible. So with that, I'm happy to take questions on topics that may be of interest. You should have in front of you a full list of the administration's 2015 legislative agenda, the dozen bills that I referred to. But I think Hoosiers should be very pleased with the progress that we've made in this first half of this session of the Indiana General Assembly. I think there's been a focus on education, a focus on fiscal responsibility. The House passed budget, as I said a week or so back, I think is in the ballpark. It represents the priorities that we outlined in our budget. While I'll continue to urge caution on the spending side, I feel very good about where we are at this point in the session, that we're going to be able to complete our work, pass another honestly balanced budget, and continue to drive the kind of innovation in all of our schools in Indiana that's going to contribute to the results that we saw renewed again last night with a good word about our increasing graduation rate. So with that, I'm open to questions.
Governor,
I'll start over here. Go ahead.
Three or four of the bills on this list, I have to be honest, I've never heard or seen as part of your agenda.
Really, which ones?
The civil immunity, the fire training academy, the certified professions, and even the energy efficiency one. I guess, when did those become your agenda items? I don't remember anything coming out or you talking about them at all.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, they've been there from day one. The administration's been working very consistently on all of those issues. Very pleased about the Fire Training Academy, particularly. That was an issue that we advocated early on, and you may recall that I made a commitment to a new energy efficiency bill at the close of the last session. Those 12 bills are the bills we've been advancing from the beginning of this session, and I'm very, very pleased with the progress about them.
Governor, you expressed a reservation with gaming expansion. The House this week passed a bill that would allow for live dealers at some table games under certain circumstances. It was a clear veto-proof vote. That changed your mind on that vote, that dynamic, or where are you on the live dealers at table games?
Well, I think people know that I don't support an expansion of gaming in Indiana. And candidly, I think that my reservations in this area have contributed to the fact that the bill that emerged from the House this week was much more modest than some of the original ideas that were proposed. Now, as the bill moves to the Senate, we'll continue to express our views in the legislative process. But if the bill gets to my desk, I'll evaluate it from the standpoint of first my view that we should not. I don't support an expansion of gaming, but also I've also made it clear that I am open to common sense reforms in business practices that allow these businesses to remain competitive in an increasingly competitive marketplace across the Midwest. But I have expressed reservations along the way about aspects of the House bill. I'm confident that our reservations contributed to this being a much more modest bill than it would have been otherwise, and we'll continue to monitor it as it moves through the legislative process, and if it gets to my desk, we'll make a decision at that time.
Eric? Can I follow up on that? The legislators have quoted you as saying,
No.
Why not?
Well, look, I think members of the General Assembly know that from the time I was a candidate for governor and is serving as governor, it's not my aim to expand gaming in the state of Indiana. I focus every day on growing the broader Indiana economy. I want to see us broadening our economy in manufacturing and life sciences and logistics and agriculture and high tech. But I recognize that these businesses in Indiana that have been a part of the fabric of our state now for more than a generation are facing new business pressures. And so I've expressed reservations about different aspects of the legislation from early on. And I'm confident that those reservations have contributed to a much more modest bill than we would have had otherwise emerging from the House. But we'll continue to express our sense of this as it goes forward. We'll watch the legislative process, and the legislature will work its will, and if it gets to my desk, I'll make a decision.
Is land-based gaming an expansion of gaming, or is it, as you said, form of business practice.
I think it's all in the details, isn't it?
Well, we have the details, so it's land-based gaming on the footprint of the existing.
Well, you're asking about my opinion. I'll render my judgment if the bill ever gets to my desk. And but looking at the details of and the entirety of any aspect of this bill, I'll look at through the prism of keeping my word to the people of Indiana that I don't support an expansion of gaming. But again, I want to make it very clear. I'm not against reforms and common sense business practices that allow these enterprises to be more competitive. But we'll as I said, if it gets to my desk, we'll make that decision.
Why, in your view, is this bill a more modest proposal to pass the House? Because a lot that was stripped out was the taxing changes that would have impacted local governments.
Yeah.
Could you explain to me why you think it's a more modest approach?
Well, I think others can probably explain that. I mean, there were earlier proposals with regard to the extent to which land-based casinos could build out. There's the number of jobs associated with other aspects of the bill. But now we see things like pilot programs and other matters. So I would leave that to others. But I don't think that's really disputable. Look, we've said from the time I started in this office, we're going to make job creation job one. I want to see us grow the broader economy in Indiana. I've neither advocated an expansion nor a contraction of gaming in our state. And so as this has moved forward, I'm confident that the reservations that we've expressed have contributed to a more modest bill. As it goes into the Senate, I expect that'll continue to be the case. And if it gets to that desk, we'll make a decision accordingly. Tony?
I think some of these questions are coming from a place of, in hearing lawmakers talk, we get the impression that you are speaking to specific provisions of the bill behind the scenes, but then it seems to us like you're not doing that in public. Is that accurate, or is there a reason for that?
Tony, I can tell you, I have conversations with legislators about bills all the time in the hallways. Sometimes our administration takes a formal position. We testify before a committee hearing. Other times we express those opinions and in passing conversations. So I want to let the legislative process work here. And I want to respect the legislative process. And we'll see where it goes. If it gets to my desk, you'll know my opinion for sure.
Yeah.
Go.
The proposal from the House Republicans on school funding, the Democrats say, would end up with 139 school districts seeing actual funding cuts. Do you think that having reform the school funding formula ends up with something like that? Is that appropriate, in your opinion?
I think we're still very early in the budget process. What will be important, I think, is that as we move toward increasing education funding by hundreds of millions of dollars, that we make sure that benefits schools in communities large and small. And so I very much support the principle of raising the foundation in our school funding formula as a means of ensuring that school districts all across the state of Indiana have additional resources. But as you factor in the complexity formula and other aspects of this, I'm very confident we'll get to the end of the day this will be fair to all concerned. But, you know, frankly, in my first budget, we had a very significant increase in education funding. But in the aftermath, I found out that the very nature of the formula resulted in the fact that many school districts in smaller communities didn't see any net new resources. And so we came into this process saying we want all the ships to rise in Indiana. We want to see funding increases for all of our schools in addition to additional flexibility in our traditional schools, a greater, stronger foundation under our public charter schools, and I want to lift the cap on our school choice program. Go.
You finished a series of major revisions to the ISTEP test this spring, but I'm curious, there are proposals coming out of the Senate that would do away with ISTEP altogether and adopt something perhaps national, perhaps already created for other states and the like. What do you think about that?
Well, that's not on our agenda, but we'll look at it. We've had some preliminary conversations, and we'll continue to on that topic. My lodestar is that accountability matters. It's important that we measure student performance. And it's important that we grade our schools just like we grade our kids, and make that information available to parents going forward. I mean, parents deserve to know how their kids are doing in school, and they deserve to know how their schools are doing for their kids. But the nature of the test, I mean, ISTEP's been in place for a long time in the state of Indiana since back in the days of the A-plus program. And there's proposals that we strongly supported, known as Freedom to Test, where our administration came out very much in favor of allowing private schools in Indiana to opt for a different standardized test if they so desire. And I think that's a very sensible proposal. Other proposals to replace the ISTEP test, we'll consider them in due course.
Do you support state involvement in the building of a soccer stadium in Indiana?
I want to see the details, Jim. I think it's important that it be fiscally responsible. I think the measure that's moved out of the General Assembly to essentially create a district around that has merit, but we want to see the details. I want to make sure that anytime we see a public facility that has a public support, that the public that will enjoy that facility will be the ones we look to for that financial support. I think it's important that the people that will enjoy the benefits of any facility for any sport be the ones who essentially are looked to for the source of any public financial backing for that, as opposed to constructing a local venue and then looking to all the taxpayers in Indiana to support that. So we'll be looking at it through that prism. But I know there's it's not exactly my sport. My kids played it. Not sure I understand all the rules of soccer, to be quite honest with you, but there's a lot of enthusiasm for soccer across Indiana, and I think as long as we proceed in a fiscally responsible way, as long as we focus on making sure that any framework is done in a manner that respects the principle of the people that are benefiting from it would be the people that would carry the public load for that. We'll give it a fair look.
Governor, why did your administration oppose the bill that aimed to increase the vaccination rate for HPV?
Well, first and foremost, let me say, I strongly support vaccinations in the state of Indiana. And Indiana law is quite clear in this regard, that with regard to certain diseases, children are required to be vaccinated to attend an accredited public school. I think that's sensible. I just think with regard to this matter, HPV has to do with sexually transmitted diseases and the vaccination against those. Right now in Indiana, our schools provide information on immunization to our families. I just think this is a matter better left to parents in consultation with their doctors. I think the concerns that I heard from members of the General Assembly on this issue, and frankly from people around Indiana, was that by establishing a goal of 80% immunization, that may set Indiana on a path toward a mandate, which created concern for many people around the state. So the State Department of Health will continue to promote efforts to make this vaccine available, to make sure that parents and families are aware of it, aware of the benefits of it. But I think it's a decision that's best left to parents in consultation with their doctors.
Governor, any thoughts on the controversy out of Newcastle, the letters that were done, I think, by like third or fourth graders addressed to you about the superintendent of public instruction and removing her from power, taking her job, the 1.3 million votes narrative. Have you seen it? Are you familiar with it? Got any thoughts on it?
Well, I represented Henry County for a long time when I was in the Congress. This is a great community with great schools and great kids. Look, we all know that politics has no place in the classroom, and if there's any action that needs to be taken here, I have every confidence that local school officials will be able to handle it appropriately.
Do you see any difference between that and the school choice rally that you attended a couple weeks ago, where you had a dozen or so kids staying on the date with you as you touted the benefits of school choice programs?
Well, I just think that when it comes to teaching our kids in the classroom, it's best to leave that to teachers and principals and superintendents. And I love this community. It's great people. And I have to assume best intentions by all concerned. And I can just say if there's any, any questions that are being raised are probably best dealt with by local school officials. And I'm very confident that they'll handle it in an appropriate way. What do I make of the fact that we had about a 50% increase in the number of applications for our voucher program? We now have the largest educational voucher program in America. Was the question, what do I make of it?
Typically, vouchers are to offset costs for families who might struggle to pay tuition at private schools.
Well, the framework in Indiana goes a little bit beyond disadvantaged families to middle-class families, and that was a decision the legislature made some time ago, and I strongly support it. I've long believed there's nothing that ails education that can't be fixed if you give parents more choices and teachers more freedom to teach. And I honestly believe that that the demand that's reflected in the increased applications is an affirmation that more parents are interested in having more choices, whether that's going to a different public school, whether it's going to a different public charter school, or whether it's going to a private school in the case of a voucher. And I support that.
What about students who might not have previously been in public schools, who are just starting out using vouchers to go to private schools?
Well, I support the program. I do. And I'm very proud of that as an aspect of education in Indiana. But make no mistake about it, when you look at our agenda, which we unveiled back in December, when I said this was to be an education session, our agenda has to do with all of the schools that educate the more than 1 million kids. I strongly support our voucher program. I strongly support our public charter program, and with additional resources and accountability. And I also, we're calling for very significant increases in funding for our traditional public schools and greater flexibility for our public schools. To me, the way we're going to achieve the goal I expressed of having 100,000 more kids in B or better schools by 2020 is an all-of-the-above strategy. If we promote greater innovation and provide greater resources for our traditional schools, if we make quality public charter schools more available, and if we give parents more choices through our voucher program.
We have time for two more questions.
What will your message be at CPAC?
Well, number one, I'm very honored to have been invited. I'll be speaking at the what's known as the Reagan Dinner tomorrow night. My message at CPAC is really, I don't want to spoil all of it, Jim. I really hope you join the tens of Americans who tune in on C-SPAN. I'm going to talk about, in part, what's happening at the states. I think the American people are tired of a Washington knows best mentality, on the left and on the right. And I'm going to talk about what we've been able to accomplish here in the state of Indiana, when we brought state-based innovation and reform in a broad range of areas, from education recently to healthcare, transportation, and I'm going to make a case for state-based reform being put back at the center of our party's thinking. And I'll have a little bit of advice for a rising generation of national leaders. But looking forward to it. A little bit nervous about it, but we're looking forward to it and grateful for the opportunity.
Is Indiana in better shape than Wisconsin?
Nice. Indiana's on a roll. I said that in the State of the State address. I'm so excited about last night's numbers about graduation rates. To look at our graduation rates in the state of Indiana and see the progress our schools are making. To look at student achievement on the rise, look at our economy growing. Unemployment over 8% when I became governor, and 5.8% today. I'm going to be talking about some of the frustrations with Washington, D.C., but I'm going to remind them that I come from a state that works and tell them what that looks like and encourage them to give states more freedom and more flexibility to innovate. Because I'll tell you what, the longer I go as governor of the state of Indiana, the more convinced I am that the cure for what ails this country is going to come more from our nation's state capitals than it ever will from our nation's capital. And you can expect to hear me say that tomorrow night.
So that's a yes.
Yeah. I don't think I used that term. Yeah. What I support is the principle of raising the foundation, raising the base for all the schools around the state of Indiana to ensure that as we invest hundreds of millions of dollars more in public education in Indiana, that benefits schools in all 92 counties. I understand the concerns have been raised about particular implications of that. As the budget now moves in full force to the Senate, I'm very confident that we're going to come out at the end with a budget that fairly balances all of those interests. But look, it's not just about the funding. It's also about freedom and flexibility. And that's why, I started out talking about the Freedom to Teach initiative and the progress we've made there in broad and bipartisan manner. That you have Republicans and Democrats coming together around the idea of giving our traditional public schools the option of greater freedom, greater flexibility to pay teachers more in the classroom. And I'm very encouraged about that. So it's about fairness in funding, but it's also about flexibility. And that's going to be a pathway toward, I think, better outcomes in our schools and greater student achievement.
So you're in sync with the Republicans' budget, where if your goal's climbing, that likely means that your funding goes down?
Well, you saw the budget that we submitted. As I said, I think the budget the House passed is in the ballpark, but it's a work in progress, and we'll continue to work through it.